Machete Mate recognizes the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and any indigenous elders of other communities who may be listening today. We stand in solidarity in their struggle towards the colonization and land back. Buena mi gente, what is good? This is Machete Mate back with the current events episode. Sometimes we put out no content, sometimes we double up. This is one of those weeks where we double up because we had the very, very good conversation with Julian Garrido the other day. I wasn't able to make it, but the boys did a fantastic job talking to friend of the show about Ecuador and his native Argentina. Check that out. But today we're going to do a little bit of a current events. It's just two of us because he's in the process of moving and life and all that stuff. Also, I promise there is going to be a third Machete Minute coming out. I just haven't had a chance. Again, life. And again, I think the theme of all this is like life keeps getting in the way, right? We're slaves to capitalism. So if you want to sort of mitigate those effects, show us some solidarity, show us some love on our Patreon at patreon.com/machetemate. That way we can sort of justify spending more time putting out better quality content for y'all. Because I know all I really want to do is just do this and garden and spend time with my beautiful son. I'm sure Austin has things he enjoys, but who cares? Anyway, I'm Leroy, coming to you from unceded Wurundjeri land in so-called Melbourne, Australia, with the aforementioned Austin. What's going on, man?
What's up, buddy? Glad to be here. And believe it or not, there are things that I enjoy to do. I don't garden, though I should probably take that up. That sounds good. However, I say that if we had a whole bunch of Patreon money, we would start the Machete Mate community garden. Some shit like that.
Hell yeah.
We'd have a whole family of gardens. We'd have one in Australia. We'd have one in Puerto Rico. We'd have one in Virginia. We'd do a whole fucking thing. And then we'd lay together and they'd all have different... they'd have one single TikTok. But they would do different like clips and stuff like that. So that's just the world we could be living in if we were able to do this full time. All that aside, though. Oh, my goodness. I'm so happy I was off today. So that's fucking great. That's so cool to be off and not have to work. Wow, isn't that beautiful? I've got a couple great trips that are in the works that I'm extremely excited for. Probably going to be in New York City next weekend. Oh my goodness. Yes. I think I might have mentioned that on the Argentina or the Julian podcast. That'll be fun. I'm going to be probably in Las Vegas in like a month. Wow, holy hell. That's going to be so cool. So your boys over here living the dream, living life. Yeah, good to be here, though.
Living the dream. That's one of my favorite white guy phrases.
Is that a white guy phrase?
Yeah, what's going on? Yo, living the dream.
Yeah, makes sense.
Whatever, man. Anyway, I'm doing fine as well. Thanks for asking, Austin. we had my company party last night. Like I was telling Austin off camera, it was an open bar. Not open bar, but it was like free beer, wine, and cider all night. So I decided to... take out all the extra labor I provide the company for free out in these drinks. Didn't go too overboard, but like I'm definitely like I have that low raspy like 6-year-old like chain smoking voice right now, but it's fine. I feel fine. It's all good. But now other than that, it's cold today. Like yesterday was really nice and warm, and today just kind of dropped overnight. So we're definitely getting into winter, which means talking about gardens, it's getting colder. So I'm going to be planting some tulips and some daffodil bulbs tulipan. They should flower blossom in the spring here. So looking forward to that. Pretty excited about that. Other than that, family's fine. Ernie's getting big and cheeky, and his communication is getting very, very good. He's like signing like the best of them, which is really exciting. What do you say we just get straight into it? So like I said, we haven't done a current events in a minute. There's a few things going on. I think we agreed that this one's going to be kind of slightly different format, but we're going to be focusing on a couple of stories. So we'll be talking about the election in Paraguay. That's tomorrow. So what is it, April 30th, over there in Paraguay. We'll be talking a little bit about Argentina, particularly sort of following up on a few things that Julian said in the conversation that the guys had, and then talking about a bit of Ecuador as well. So basically the last two stories is kind of, I want to say a debrief, but sort of a just a conversation about the thing that they talked about, because these things are just moving so fast and there's a lot coming out. Even today, there's a few stories that are coming out. But let's kick it off in Paraguay. Like you say, Austin is my hobby horse. Just because there's not a lot that's coming out of there. But like I said, they have their election tomorrow. It's a pretty momentous election, just because, like we've discussed a million times, like I've talked about at length, the Colorado Party is basically a state within the state that's dominated Paraguayan society for the last like 80 years. Only interrupted once when our boy, Fernando Lugo, Frente Guasu, was elected. But then he was one of the first victims of the wave of lawfare that took over Latin America, right? So it's funny, we talk about the red tide, and you know, we like a good contradiction. We like things opposites coming together. On the other side of that was the lawfare tide, I suppose, and then it sort of tried to erase a lot of that, and now we see it coming back. And now we're seeing on the other side as well with the 21st century fascism that we just coined like 10 minutes ago. So yeah, so it's something to keep your eye on. Like last poll suggested that the Concertación, so that sort of centrist to sort of left-ish coalition that's running against Colorado Party, had something like just under a 2% sort of edge in the polls. But that was within sort of the margin of error for most of the polls coming out. So it's very interesting to see what's going on. Another couple of things as well is that a couple of weeks ago, Mario Abdu and other members of his Colorado administration out in the open met with the CIA, members of the State Department, both in Paraguay and the U.S. So they came down to Paraguay and then they went up and just visited a few things up in the U.S. So it's kind of funny how they're sort of, again, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying it's just very interesting that these meetings are happening right before an election that looks like is going to go the other way, right? And part of it as well is, like we talked about, Efrain Alegre, who's the candidate, the top guy, the presidential candidate for the other coalition, for the opposition coalition. He has one of his campaign planks, one of the things he's talking about, one of the policies he's going to put forth is moving away from Taiwan and towards China, which, you know, it's apocalyptic for the global north people, for like the State Department, for all the spooks. So that's obviously a concern for all these CIA State Department people, for Austin's friends up there in Virginia. But yeah, man, like, what do you like, what's your take on all this, man? Like, what's your final sort of thing heading into this?
Thank you for all of that, Leroy. I got a lot of different thoughts heading into this, right? Now, we've talked a little bit about Paraguay already in the last couple episodes that we've done. I know you, as you mentioned, since it is your hobby horse, you've done a good job talking about Paraguay on the minute, on various minutes in the last couple months as well. If I'm not mistaken, polling, some of the final polling from this week kind of showed it almost like dead even between Alegre and Peña. So that's, you know, interesting to note. I think it's also important to note, and we've talked about this previously, right, how the Frente Guasu already fell out with the Concertación, right, as you've mentioned as well. Yeah. Which I think, in my opinion, is honestly admirable on the part of the Frente Guasu, right? Essentially saying to Alegre, okay, you're not going to agree to some of our more left-wing proposals. Well, then fuck you, we're out, right? Very much respect for that. And because of Paraguay's election system, it's first past the post, correct? Yeah. There's not a second round. So there's a lot of different outcomes here. I think it's also important to note that Paraguay is one of those last explicitly right-wing holdouts in South America, right? So though Efrain Alegre is very much just kind of like a liberal Democrat, so to speak, I think if he was to win, that would be a welcome change for Paraguayan society, in my opinion, right? With that said, and I know this is something you've said repeatedly, right? If I had to make a prediction right now, I think Peña's going to win, right? I think the Colorados are probably going to win it. I think it'll be a mixture of a couple different things, right? Piggybacking off the last thing you said there as far as meeting with like U.S. officials. It's just going to be classic clientelism, machine politics, ballot stuffing kind of stuff that'll probably put them over the line. And maybe a mixture of voter suppression in there, right? I think we are absolutely seeing in this last year like a full court press to try and like from the United States and the hemispheric right to try and like recover and like regroup and like gather what's left of their forces, right? We see what's happened in Guatemala where they're just stopping a left-wing victory at all costs. Like they are stealing it in broad daylight, right? And the same will go for Paraguay, right? They will just make sure that they can keep the Colorados in power at all costs. We already saw what happened in Peru at the end of last year, right? I think after the election of Lula, once again, there was just a fucking... the hemispheric right wing just has decided in various places to just say, fuck it. We're just going to do whatever we can to hang on to whatever power we have, especially as they hang on for our next story here. That is to say Argentina, right? That fucking golden goose in October. but I think when I think about this election in Paraguay in general, something that I think has been the most fascinating aspect of it for me has been the way that Efraín Alegre has ran his campaign. From what I've seen, a lot of his campaign rhetoric has focused on combating the mafias, right? It's been anti-corruption politics. And I think this is something we talk about a lot, this politics of anti-corruption, how, what the fuck does it even mean, right? And in a lot of cases, how like right-wingers will like cynically use it. What makes Paraguay unique in this aspect is that, I mean, there's been almost unquestioned right-wing rule for like a long-ass time. So if you are maintaining an anti-corruption politics, well, naturally you're going to be anti-Colorado, like just by definition. So like, I think it's interesting to see how that sort of politics has manifested itself in Paraguay. I think an interesting analogy is also Mexico, right? Which had right-wing domination for such a long time. So it made anti-corruption politics that AMLO promoted as much more fertile ground for the left wing. So once again, adapting to your local conditions, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I know you had something to say, so I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, 100%. And I think on that last note, because that's another thing that Alec was talking about, right? His, you know, he's going to combat corruption, anti-corruption, you know, the mafias and all this stuff. And like you would think on the surface, I don't know, it might be like sort of a cynical view of it, but like you would think that on the surface that like that would necessarily mean voting against the Colorado Party. But we got to remember as well, a lot of the pushback against the Colorado Party has to do with the legacy of the Stroessner dictatorship. And Peña at the moment is from the opposing faction to the basically the heirs of that, right? So Mario Abdu and his clique are all part of that sort of Stroessner legacy faction within the Colorado Party, whereas Peña, Horacio Cartes, who's like the chairman of the party, they're from that sort of more pro-US, pro, you know, neoliberal sort of wing of the party. So they can sort of brush it out because look, yes, we're Colorado, yes, we're this and that, whatever, but like that's not us. We're trying to take it on a new path. So it'd be interesting to see if that's enough for a lot of people, for like a lot of people who like all they knew was Colorado Party, right? That's all they know. So it's almost like voting against, it's voting for the devil you know, but slightly better, that whole type of thing. But I mean, we'll see how that works. But at the same time, like people within that faction also have like lingering like scandals like hanging over them. Like just like I mentioned, like Cartes was declared a I forgot what the exact phrase was, but like the State Department, like the U.S. government have like declared him they basically sanctioned him, right? And other members of the Colorado Party, but we'll see how much that like plays into it. And sort of going back into something we were talking about before, like we're already seeing like a lot of articles coming out from like the Financial Times, The Economist, Bloomberg talking about like, oh, how sad it is that Latin America is being lost to China and blah, 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 and this and that. And like, there was one, I think it was from, I think it was Bloomberg. It might've been Financial Times that came out the other day talking about how Latin America is no longer like in the backyard of the US, but it's becoming part of the front yard of China and how like that's really bad. And like it's like, they're not even reading what they're actually writing. You know, it's like this fucking bullshit. But and going back to a few things about Allegri as well, like obviously it'd be a welcome change if he became president, if he won this election, but we can't get it twisted. Like, he's not going to govern as a, you know, as a leftist or even like remotely like social democrat. He is a centrist, like you said. He's sort of like a liberal democrat of the party. His main party that's part of this big coalition was essentially like the institutional, like controlled opposition during the Stroessner dictatorship, right? It was the one opposition party that he allowed to exist to give it like this veneer of democracy that he had there. So like, let's not get it twisted either. And also Peña himself, just until a few years ago, was a member of Allegri's party. And then when obviously he wanted to advance in society, like what we said, like in Paraguay, if you wanted to advance in society professionally, if you want to get to politics, you want to get to business, you want to do all this, you more or less had to be part of the Colorado party. So once he saw these barriers go up, he's like, oh well, I'm just gonna switch to this party. So there really isn't any ideological like sort of like rigor there, which I think to your point, like it's very, very admirable that Frente Guasu would pull out and be like this is not something that we've necessarily signed up for. This is not what we want. You know, we always talk about sort of I don't want to say coming to coalition, but like sort of understanding what needs to be done to get elected to retain power. But at the same time, you got to stay true to what you believe, because the Frente Guasu is a very much a grassroots, like on the ground movement. Whereas this whole coalition running against the Colorado party is basically a massive coalition of like dozens of parties ranging from centrist all the way to like a communist party. So, I mean, like it's an interesting situation, man.
Yeah, definitely. No, there's a lot I'd love to say to that. I guess like the optimistic side of me like wants to like look on the bright side of like an Allegri victory for like a couple of different reasons. I think like, I mean, you mentioned pivoting toward China, right? I mean, that's a thing, right? That's nothing to ignore, I suppose. An Allegri government would also enthusiastically rejoin things like UNASUR, right? Would collaborate with Lula, would collaborate with Petro, at least would be like a friendly face in like the region, so to speak. Allegri has talked during his campaign about like social programs for like the poor and things like that. So like, okay, you know, that's been positive rhetoric as well. But getting to the final thing you said there, though, because I absolutely agree with everything you said. The Frente Guasu are in pulling out are, I would say, recognizing something that we always say about liberal democracy, right? It's that it's when governing within liberal democracy as a leftist coalition, as a leftist party, a socialist party, workers' party, et cetera, whatever the fuck you want to call it. You have to always recognize that there's limitations to what you can achieve. And if you're going to put your name towards something that has Efrain Allegri at the ticket, you are seriously running the risk of taking on a pretty significant backlash from the people within 4 years, right? When you're not able to actually deliver, when it remains business as usual for the most part. And I say eternally, the cautionary tale when it comes to being leftists and engaging in liberal democracy is the FMLNA in El Salvador. Yeah. That is the cautionary tale, right? I mean, we're talking about a former guerrilla army that had San Salvador at its knees, became a political party. Oh my God, how inspiring of a story it was for them to win electoral power. And what the fuck happened? In engaging in liberal democracy, they had to do things as a governing party that got them tainted with the brush of establishment politics or whatever the fuck we want to call it, and allowed it possible for a character like Bukele to come to power. You could make the same case for Brazil right now. Granted, Lula and the PT are back, but the same shit happened there, right? Governing within a liberal democracy made it very possible for them to get significant backlash from the people for economic downturns, for things that were out of their control, for whatever the fuck. I go back to what our friend Julian said when we recorded on Monday or whenever that was, talking about Ecuador. I thought it was very fascinating how he said he very much would prefer early elections because he thinks the Revolución Ciudadana would have a better chance. But that when he thinks about it, he gets slightly worried when he thinks about having to wait for two whole more years, because that means 2 years of governance for the mayorships they won, for the governorships they won. It means 2 years of governance for these municipal electeds under a system that they fundamentally cannot change.
Yeah.
Now, you can't expect the average working person to look at what's happening on the top and say, oh, well, you know what? It's not the mayor of Quito's fault. You know, no, it's okay. There's nuances here. There's the U.S. Embassy. No, they're not going to say that. They're going to say, why the fuck isn't anything different? Fuck you. I'm voting for this crazy right-wing populist instead. Right. Obviously, it's a lot more complicated and multi-layered than that. But when engaging in liberal democracy, that you run that risk. I think of Venezuela. Right. I think Venezuela is another great example of testing the absolute limits of what can be achieved within a liberal democracy. Right. And I feel like Venezuela is in that limbo between liberal democracy and establishing some sort of local form of socialism to replace it. But of course, because of the crushing boot of U.S. sanction, et cetera, they're essentially stuck in that limbo. But my number one theme of the last 10 years in Latin American politics is every fucking year the Cuban Revolution ages like a fine wine. Every single year the Cuban Revolution is vindicated. Cuba is absolutely vindicated every fucking year, right? When it just seems clearer and clearer that engaging within liberal democracy presents issues that can sometimes be insurmountable, right? I worry about Petro sometimes. I think like what he's been doing is bold in Colombia. Like, oh, wow, there's a lot to be optimistic about and hopeful there. But I worry about Petro sometimes getting potentially swallowed up by liberal democracy. The only example I can think of that is, I would say, and this might piss people off, that has like navigated the system very well, I think, is Morena and AMLO, right? I think they still have a wide mandate from the people. I think they've been able to absolutely just bury and humiliate the PRI and the PAN in ways that I don't think I ever thought were possible. Like for anybody who's just following Mexican politics now, you got to understand these parties were the powerhouses.
Yeah.
And they're getting humbled just regularly. But I worry about the future of Moreno, right? I could easily see not trying to get too doomer here. I could easily see a situation where Claudia Sheinbaum, basically the governor of Mexico City, is AMLO's successor and gets fucking attacked from all sides during her presidency. And like, I don't want to like make weird comparisons, but like what happened with Lula and Dilma happening with AMLO and Sheinbaum in this situation. I don't know. That interview with Julian really kind of like fucked me up when I think about these sorts of things. Like I say all the time, and I'm gonna wrap this up. I've been all over the fucking place here, but the last thing I'm gonna say here, I guess, is we pivot perhaps to the next story here, because that's what I'm getting to. I talked a lot of shit about the lawfare tide or whatever the fuck.
Yeah,
I talked a lot of shit about that because of how you described, right? All mainstream media in the United States, oh my God, where they were saying, what were they saying? They were saying, oh my God, the right wing is taking power across Latin America. Oh my God, is this a mandate for right wing populism, right? When Bolsonaro was winning, when Lasso won, when all this shit, when Venezuela was on its knees, when Añez took power in Bolivia, right? I always called bullshit on all of that. You know why? Yeah. Because at the end of the day, these left-wing movements in Latin America, they were so based on social movements, on unions, on people, right? People just saw Maduro, Lula, Evo, whatever the fuck, and just, oh, yeah, they're out of power. We got it. No. Yeah, you got Evo out of power. That didn't fucking change anything. The people were still on the streets and able to get power back, right?
Yeah.
And I always took comfort in knowing that.
Yeah.
I get really scared when I see this 21st century fascism, as we're calling it, this Bukeleismo or whatever the fuck. This is the first time I can say, like really following Latin American politics, where I see far-right politics with a popular mandate. Now that is some terrifying shit right there, right? Like we can talk all to the time till we're blue in our face about Bolsonaro. This guy at his best like got maybe a slight majority. Bukele's out here with 90% support, right? With policies that are reverberating throughout Latin America. with we got generals in Argentina, which is what I was about to say, talking about we need El Método Bukele, the Bukele method. Dude, that we got Suri Rios in Guatemala saying, I'm going to do what Bukele is doing up here in Guatemala, which is, of course, code for, yeah, we're getting rid of all these fucking Mayans, right? It's going back to the old days, what my daddy did, right? So that's some terrifying shit. Sorry, go ahead.
No, 100%. I agree with all of that. And like, before we move on to this next one, like one thing I want to highlight as well is like one of the major things that we're hearing lately with the US, and anytime we talk about, they talk about like totalitarianism, they talk about, oh, you know, the one party has been in charge for blah, 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 the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, and blah, 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 the Cuban Communist Party, blah, 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 one party rule. Like, I can't you know, express this enough. Like, the Colorado Party has been in power. One party has been in power since like the early 40s, except for a 2-3 year period in like 2008. But the U.S. State Department, all these U.S. officials are happily meeting with these people. So they should tell you that, like, liberal democracy, when they try to paint it as like, you know, freedom of ideas, marketplace of ideas, we need opposition, this and blah, blah, it's all fucking bullshit. It's all this cynical propaganda that we're told that's what defines democracy. And because the U.S. has ostensibly two parties, we're a real democracy, but like not Cuba. You know, it's only one party. They're not really a democracy yet. I mean, sure, they go like street by street, organizing people, meeting with the people, moving these social movements. Sure, but that's not really a democracy, right? Like, sure, China, you know, they do all this, you know, they've have all these social programs and lifted out all these people out of poverty, but you know, it's only the one party, so that's not really democracy. It's what I'm trying to say, it's all bullshit. We need to sort of rethink our definition of democracy as being a people first, like, entity, a people first idea, regardless of political party or not. Because like what like you said, like, we could talk about like, on if Maduro were to drop dead right now, like Hugo Chavez, you know, passed away or whatever, the United States and everyone's gonna point and goes, ha, okay, cool, like, you know, the tyrant, the totalitarian, you know, tyrant is out of power. But at the end of the day, the commune still exists, right? The communard union still exists, right? People are still in place building something. The people are building social movements and building towards something, and that's real democracy. But anyway, I sort of, you know, digress. But we just keep it rolling. And speaking of liberal democracy in South America and the this right-wing populist sort of popularity, we'll head over next door to Argentina, where is Julian Garrido, that we talked about, you know, from the show from the other day, his native land. And it's looking kind of grim, man. So, like, I think the latest big news is that Alberto Fernández, who's the current president, has announced that he's not going to run for re-election. And what most people are saying that is that, like, that was always sort of like coming, right? No one really expected him to run again. And that if anything, it took him a little bit too long to actually announce this, which may have set sort of the movement back a little bit, especially given that they have sort of American style primaries for their candidates and stuff like that, as far as I understand, which are coming up soon. But not looking good for like the left in Argentina, especially with the rise of someone, and we've talked about her at length as well, of this new political superstar, Javier Milei, who is basically, and I always say, he's this like 15-year-old meme lord, alt-right Redditor, except if he was a 50-year-old Argentinian economist, right? And he's been doing all the rounds and all the major TV networks and shows in Argentina, talking about all the bullshit that you hear, like these like fringy sort of right-wingers in Australia and the US talk about, you know, talking about like cultural Marxism and like decrying like all the communist turn of the US and all this fucking other bullshit. But that's where we're at, and he's gaining popularity. He's everywhere. His face is plastered everywhere, so to speak. But yeah, man, like, not looking grim. Like, what was your sort of takeaways from what like Julian was saying? Because it wasn't, from what I could understand, it wasn't very, like you say, it was, seems pretty dire, man.
Yeah, so pulling behind the curtain here, I shit you all not when I say we've been trying to get Julian on the podcast for like months, And part of that is because we've been desperately trying to get somebody from Argentina on the podcast. I don't think Argentina in general gets enough attention in the United States for whatever reason. Like, we don't talk enough about Argentine politics when it's
because they're white.
Well, that's probably part of it. But no, dude, it's like, here's the thing. In all seriousness, dude, Argentina is massively important for the region. It's massively important for the region. Oh, man, where the fuck do I start? So first of all, like, Julian definitely like kind of depressed me with what he said. But rather than depressing, it was very sobering. Right. And Julian's a good political mind. I trust him a lot on these sorts of things. I think. And I don't know why when I was ranting just a moment ago, I didn't think of this exact example. I think Argentina is a great example of what we're talking about when we talk about the dangers of being a left-wing coalition engaging in liberal democracy. Just look at what has brought Argentina to where we could see a far-right fucking edgelord become president or whatever. Mauricio Macri, the former right-wing president, the president before the incumbent Alberto Fernandez, he accepted what, like the largest like IMF like loan deal in Argentine history, which that in and of itself is saying something. And that deal is what put Argentina's economy on the path to going into a tailspin. Now, unfortunately for Alberto Fernandez and Frente de Todos, that shit exploded under their watch. Do you think the average working class Argentine is saying, oh, well, you see Macri signed the deals, so it's not FDT's fault? No, no, that's not what they're saying. They're saying you guys promised that you were going to fix the economy and you didn't. So fuck you guys, right? And so the likelihood of FDT, the Frente de Todos, winning in October is almost zero. Right. And that's obviously, yes, we can't ignore the fact that there's been significant lawfare. Right. Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner being banned from office. So that's an important thing to note, is that like just like before, they're rigging these things, man. They're, you know, but it's depressing to see, and to see a character like Javier Milei rising to prominence. Oh, my God. Like, you can't even write this shit. You can't even write this shit. Like, come on, man. Damn it, right? There was even a huge story that broke a couple months ago about how, like, one of Javier Milei's, like, leaders of, like, his, like, youth operation or whatever, a woman, like, decried, like, the amount of, like, sex abuse and, like, how, like, the Milei campaign was, like, a fucking personality cult and how, yeah. No, this is not what Milei says he stands for as a libertarian, right? No, he's making this all about him, blah, blah, blah. Like, this girl was a true believer and she's saying this is some bad, this is a sick fuck, right? Of course, what happened, all the fucking Milei supporters took online saying, oh, this fucking woman, what the fuck does she know what she's saying? You know, fucking attacking her with sexist attacks, you name it, exactly how we know far-right people to say. Julian used the phrase alt-right to us when describing Javier Milei. That's literally what Milei represents.
Yeah,
he is the latest manifestation of so-called alt-right politics, but now in Argentina. And if this fucking guy wins, oh my God. Like, Julian even mentioned how he's talked about trying to dollarize the Argentine economy. That's the sort of completely insane idea that I could see him potentially pull off. I could see it pay short-term dividends, and I could see it explode his popularity just because of how bad the Argentine, I don't know what the currency is called right now. Now, obviously, that's wild-eyed shit, right? That's way more difficult to be done than said. So, like, we'll see. But, like, dude, oh, my God. The real fear here, though, is, once again, it's that 21st century fascism. The right wing now has a wonder kid. They have a savior. They have the fucking Bukele method, right? All it takes for Javier Milei is go to the Argentine military. Yeah, we're releasing the dogs, baby. The dirty wars are back. Let's disappear some motherfuckers up in here, right? So, like, here's the thing. That's, like, total worst-case scenario. Who the fuck knows if Milei will win? Macri and the Cambio Party or whatever the fuck they call them, the conservatives are calling themselves. They obviously still have a chance to win. And, oh, God, it's Argentina, man, right? When we're talking about, like, common currencies and UNASUR and, oh, man, if Argentina goes to the far right, fucking disaster.
Yeah, man. And there's a few things that I took away from that interview as well that kind of hit me. I think it was more like the delivery method. Like, when we talk about, like, democracy, again, going back to the idea of democracy, like in the US, like, we talk about, you know, we're this democratic country and blah, 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 you know, talking about like dictatorships and stuff. And like when Julian was talking about like this election and like the future, whatever, like in such a matter of fact way, he's like, oh yeah, well, you know, we've had democracy for 40 years, so it kind of looks like it's coming to an end and blah, blah, blah. And it was so just matter of fact. And like, and I think that points to like the attitudes in the global South, that it's a reality, the historic, a material history of like struggle against, you know, imperialism, colonialism, all this stuff, that it's like, it's been good for a while, but like, you know, it was like this before, so you might be going to that. Like, there's this sort of ingrained memory of like, quote unquote, like not having democracy. I mean, again, we call what we have in the US a democracy, but we all know better than that. And like, that's what hit me in the chest when he's just like, yeah, look, you know, we've had it for 40 years, but like, yeah, so what's probably going to happen is the right wing's going to come. And then basically, you know, the Peronistas, whatever, the left-wing Peronistas, are going to be in opposition. So basically, it's just going to see who's in opposition to see if they can change the tide of, like, our political reality. And it, and the way he was describing it, and, like, was that, like, this was going to be a paradigm shift in the reality of Argentina. It wasn't just, like, a changing of the guard for a new candidate or a new party, whatever. This was, like, this is going to be a fascist state. This is going to be for all intents and purposes, a dictatorship. And then for the next couple of years, you know, the Frente de Todos and all those, you know, coalition members in that have to get the shit together to see if they can do anything, you know, down the road. And that's what struck me as dark, all of that. Like, we could talk about what an asshole like Milei is, because he's just the guy, right? And one thing we like to talk about as well, and one thing I always push back when we talk about Florida, right? When people talk about, oh yeah, you know, Florida, this, the people there are just, you know, they're crazy, blah, blah, blah. No, it's because the right wing in Florida is more organized than any remotely left wing movement in Florida, right? And that's what we're seeing as well. Like, Milei could be anybody. Like, Macri can come back, but like the conservative right wing elements there are a lot more organized than the left wing is. And like, that's what scares me.
Dude, no, absolutely. And like, I think something, so another one of my big takeaways from our conversation with Julian when I think about the Argentine election, he did sprinkle a little bit of what I would say is maybe optimism there at the end too, which is he said something to the effect of how regardless of what happens, whether it's the far right or the right wing taking power, it's going to put the Frente de Todos, the Justicialistas, right, the Peronists, as you say, in a position where they're going to have to do some major soul searching, right?
Yeah.
And they're essentially going to be forced to figure out how to connect with the Argentine working class, right? How to rediscover that connection. On, dare I say, what is poetic, this week, in fact, I think literally yesterday, or I guess 2 days ago when people are hearing this, was the 20th anniversary of the first election of Néstor Kirchner back in 2003. So, and a lot of the Argentine left was celebrating it. That was the moment the Argentine left came back, you know? And it's a closing of the chapter. Clearly, it's a closing of the chapter. What does the Argentine left look without the Kirchners, right? That's what we're going to have to see. That's what the Argentine left is going to have to figure out. And once again, Julian kind of put it, I forget what his exact words, but he put it in an optimistic way where he said something to the effect of, I hope that this can be a time where the Frente de Todos can like figure out ways forward. And I think that's true, man. I think that is true. Whether there's, because I think at the end of the day, it's easy to get super doomer about everything. But once again, if it's Macri or somebody from his party, well, then it's business as usual, right? It's like Guillermo Lasso. It's okay. Clock is ticking, right? They're not, this is just, what does the U.S. ambassador want me to do, right?
Yeah.
So clock is ticking on their mandate, 100%, like it always is, because they have no connection to the actual masses, the social movements, et cetera. If it's somebody like Milei, I think about it more and more, like, I feel like it could play out somewhat similarly to like a Bolsonaro situation, which is like, yeah, he'll have his base. But at the end of the day, I mean, this is Latin America. So many of these countries are neo-colonies of the United States. It's really not that much you can do, right? Yeah. It's really not that much you could do, right? Perhaps it does give time for the Argentine left to really get its shit together and figure things out, because we need Argentina, man. What the fuck, right? God, Argentina is so important for the region. So I don't know. Maybe, once again, maybe this is like a therapy for me. As we're talking through this, I'm thinking, okay, it could be like United States, right? Rough 4 years, but hey, it, you know, it's Although hopefully it's a happy ending where the left doesn't fucking like dissolve or whatever.
Yo, you know what I think about like all the time, especially like in situation, like in this situation, Argentina's the land of Ernesto Che Guevara.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like it is such a like, it's heartbreaking. Like, I mean, we could talk about that he was from a, like a bourgeois family, all that stuff. But like, it's this like, it's just mind boggling, man.
Dude, he always is. What was his final dream? Bringing the revolution back down to Buenos Aires, right?
Yeah, bringing it back home.
I love thinking about the fact that Bolivia, where Che was killed, right, now is a place with a thriving socialist movement, right? With buildings named after him, with statues of Che, right? One day Argentina will be the same. One day Argentina will be, God willing, one day Argentina will be the same.
Yeah. And hold up. And you posed a question to Julian of Messi or Maradona, and you went with Messi. I didn't catch his reasoning. What was his reasoning?
He was just said because he got to see it and because it was so recent, he'll go with Messi.
I got you. Yeah. It's like when people talk about like Jordan or like LeBron, a lot of people are like, oh, I saw LeBron. You know what I mean? That type of thing. Yeah. No, but we all know the answer. As much as I love Messi, we know the answer is Maradona. Just for the added, the politics in there as well.
Yeah, he had a fucking tattoo of Che, didn't he?
100%, yeah. Because see, he kept it real. See, yeah. This is us trying to keep it light in the face of doom in Argentina. Yes. But anyway, let's keep the ball rolling. Let's head up to, I guess, the meat and potatoes of the conversation with Julian, right? Because he's based in Quito. It was a really fascinating conversation, him breaking down everything about Ecuador. And the thing I appreciate about Julian is everything he said was just like fact, just matter of fact. He's like, yeah, this is what's going on and blah, blah, blah. This is what I think and blah, blah, blah. This is what I want, but this was probably going to happen. Like, it wasn't like, for lack of a better term, like there wasn't like just, he was getting emotional. Oh, no, we need to blah, blah, blah. And getting like rhetorical. It was just like, yeah, man, blah, 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 blah. Like when he was talking about the RC, right? Revolución Ciudadana, talking about how, I mean, yeah, man, I would love for them to, you know, early elections and then to come to power. But like, we need to face the reality that it's the system and blah, blah, blah. He did a very, very good job of breaking it down, man. What were your takeaways on that part?
I had a lot of takeaways, dude. Like I said earlier, right, I thought it was very interesting how he talked about early elections juxtaposed to like later elections. Because to me, from the outside, I see the way that Revolución Ciudadana kicked ass in the elections in February. And to me, it's like, oh, well, it's inevitable. They're coming back, right? I think, once again, the biggest wild card again in Ecuador, and you know I had to ask Julian about this, Pachacutic, Conae, the indigenous movements, right? Like,
yeah.
And it was interesting, just, you know, Julian describing the two wings, right? The leftist wing, the more, we'll say the right wing, right, of Pachacutic. And, like, that's a big part of this, you know? I think one thing that gives me more hope about a place like Ecuador than Argentina, it is just that these mobilized indigenous bases, right? The mobilized Afro-Ecuadorian bases, right, which are more prominent in a place like Ecuador. I think I still have hope for Ecuador. I really do. I still am overall optimistic on the outlook, right? Just look at, like, the Lasso administration is flailing, man. Like,
yeah, man.
It was just news today that the evidence was presented to the National Assembly regarding his impeachment. It's only a matter of time. And Julian said that as well, right? It's only a matter of time before Lasso is gone. But to actually begin to address and alleviate the problems affecting Ecuadorian society, we need a change of government, right? And if there's one takeaway I really got from talking to Julian, I sincerely doubt that Lasso is going to close the assembly. I sincerely doubt it, right? In fact, if anything, the U.S. Embassy is probably telling him not to do that, right?
Yeah.
Only because of, once again, it calls early elections. Why do that? Just let your vice president steward the fucking ship for the next 2 years. Who gives a fuck, right? They don't want to lose Quito right now. They do not want to lose Quito right now, which I think is inevitable. I think it's absolutely inevitable for the Correistas to take back power in Quito, whether it's early elections, which let's hope that happens, or in, what, 2025? I think it's going to happen. Like that. But of course, that wild card, Pachacutic, man. Pachacutic. Who the fuck knows? Let's hope our boy Leonidas Issa, right, the leader of CONAE, can kind of help steer the ship there. Because if that's the case, dude, it's a wrap, right? There's no – Ecuador is one of those places that should be a fucking layup for the left, right? So there's no reason
– Yeah.
There's no reason why we shouldn't be getting that one back.
Yeah, and like, and just on that point, like, what's I guess what's one of our central philosophical tenets here, Machete Mate? Buen vivir, right? Ecuador was like, if I'm not mistaken, the first country to enshrine buen vivir in their constitution, their current constitution, right? Like you said, this should be a fucking layup. Like, if you have a right-wing government that's continued to allow this to exist in the constitution, like, this should have been a fucking layup. But reasons, man, politics, right? Government's gonna government, politics is gonna politic, and this is where we're at. And it's very interesting that, like, and I think you're right that it's probably the influence of like the North and like the US telling Lasso, like, look, don't call the elections, just cut your losses and blah blah blah. Like, can you imagine how he feels? He's probably like, oh yeah, they'll have my back. And he goes, nah, bro, like, just eat shit right now. Just, whatever. We'll sacrifice you for the greater good. You know what I mean? That must be eating him alive as well. You know what I mean? But I think one very fascinating thing that Julian said as well is that he has, and that's at Lasso, he has no allies. He's completely isolated. Like, even like other right-wing conservative people, like, he's at the mercy. He's, basically regurgitating whatever the North like wants him to do, and that's what we're seeing. And like, that's why he's in this mess. I guess if he had played his cards better, if he'd played politics a little bit better, yeah, he'd be doing all this corruption, whatever, but he'd have the support of allies around him to, like, I guess, muddy the waters of this entire thing. Because as far as we can tell, like, this whole impeachment process is like moving at like lightning speed. Like, he could be impeached next week. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like every time we do like a minute, like one or two of them every week is about like, okay, now they present evidence. Now it's moving forward. Now it's like, you know what I mean? Like, this is a very fast moving thing, and he could be out of office like next week, right? So I don't know, man. Like, maybe this is good. But again, like Julian was saying, it's a whole systemic thing, and I think that's one thing. If there's one thing that we try to get across to our listeners about Latin America, it's that we're fighting a systemic thing, right? This isn't like, we talk a lot about elections, we talk a lot about presidents and this and that, whatever. Like, that's all fine and good, but at the end of the day, like, what we're trying to get across is that, like, these people exist within the context of a neo-imperial, neo-colonial reality, right? And once we change that, because that's the primary contradiction in our region, like, nothing else really matters, right? We could talk about Lula, yeah, fantastic fucking Lula's president, but like, look what he's up against now, like, trying to like undo what Bolsonaro said while trying to undo the effects of like Obama era neoliberal reforms in Brazil. You know what I mean? It's just fucked, man.
Dude, no, absolutely. Like, I so the last thing I want to say on Ecuador is that I think it's really, I mean, Julian literally led with this, which is important. It's the situation on of crime in Ecuador, right?
Oh yeah.
It's exploded in the last 10 years. Like, it's hard to overstate that, right? Like, I know some people might hear us or other people harp on crime and go like, "What? These are like right wing talking points." No, you don't get it. Like, crime has exploded in Ecuador in the last 10 years, and I never made the connection of like the peace deals in Colombia, right, and cartels migrating to Ecuador because it's those specific ports that have become massive boons for drug trafficking through South America. What was interesting, I think I said this to you before we started recording. Apparently, the Ecuadorian government made an announcement that they're going to start classifying narco traffickers or like gangs as terrorists, right? Which to me, once again, it reads to me these right-wing governments beginning to take notes from El Salvador or trying to go in that direction, testing those waters, right? You see, we're going to be tough on crime. Yeah, am I going to lock up my political opponents? Maybe. But we're being tough on crime, right? Oh my God, we're going to lock so many people up, it's going to make your head spin, right? That's the Bukele method, right? And dude, that shit resonates. I hate to say it, but it resonates, man. Like, it's just that it's classic fascism, man. It's that easy to understand, easy, simple, making very complicated issues into a simple sound bite. And like, dude, I hate to go back to it, but the Bukele propaganda machine, it is truly unlike anything I have ever seen. It is unlike anything I have ever seen. Dude, I have average people in my normal life asking me about Bukele. I'm like, how the fuck did this guy do this? Like,
Yeah.
holy shit, this is some, like, If I'm even like, you know, I loved, was it, Bukele was even tweeting this week about Tucker Carlson, lamenting him and saying, oh, Tucker's a great guy, because Tucker Carlson had Bukele on his fucking show, right? Mm-hmm. If I was a Republican asshole, if I was Donald Trump, I would be saying that same shit. I'd be saying, ah, you see in El Salvador, they got rid of the gangs. That's what I'm going to do here. You don't think that's coming? You don't think that's coming? And you don't think that's going to resonate with Hispanic people? It will. That's terrifying to think about. Yeah, like, man. This is a cancer that is quickly going to spread before we knew. I fear this is a cancer that is going to quickly spread before we can fucking recognize that 21st century fascism is upon us, right? And like, I just, fuck. It's just amazing how analogous it is too, right? Like, I just say to people, the Nuevas Ideas party logo, it's literally a giant N on a blue background. Come on, man. Like, you can't even write this shit. The party headquarters might as well be fucking Bukele's face 100 times over. You know what I'm saying? Like, God damn it. So, like, this is bad. But getting back to Ecuador, right? Like, I found that fascinating that the government was saying that. And I think that's what Julian was getting at, right? Like, if there's anything that could prevent Acorius to return, perhaps like a right-wing populist focusing on that sort of rhetoric, right? That's really fucking bad, right? Oh, my God. I hate to be all over the place, but the last thing I think about when I think about this point, I get so worried about Guatemala this next month, man. Dude, it's fucking powder keg, dude. You've got a right wing that could potentially have a mandate of doing whatever the fuck it wants amidst a very militant, well-organized indigenous movement. Oh, dude, that is a fucking combustible. Those are, oh, fuck. Like, I get really fucking worried about what's about Guatemala in these next couple months, man.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm glad you took it in that direction, because I'm calling it right now. Suri Rios is going to win the election, or at least the right wing is going to win. I'm calling it right now. Hopefully it's a kiss of death and I'm wrong and the opposite happens, but I'm calling it right now. And the dangerous thing about that is that when we say there was a genocide in Guatemala for, what would you say, 30, 40 years? We're saying there was a genocide, like systematic murder of indigenous people in Guatemala for that period of time, right? Under the guise of fighting communists. But the way they defined communists was indigenous. They would go like, so communists are about the poor people. Mayas, like the indigenous people are poor, so they're communists. So they would go and literally burn down villages. Like there's just villages, there's whole stretches of like, you know, out in, you know, the rural areas are just been leveled. You know what I mean? And I wouldn't be surprised if that happens again. And I think, and I like the way you positioned it. Sorry, as my son comes in and wants to be part of this. Everybody say hello to Ernie. Anyway, he's gone now. Sorry, folks. He's auditioning to be the fourth member of this podcast. Anyway, but I like the way you positioned it, that it's basically this right-wing, like this entity, right, Suri Rios, against organized militant indigenous like social movements. Like that's like you say, it's a powder keg. Like that's going to be, if you know, Rios pulls it off, that's it. We're going to see a repeat of her dad's dictatorship. Like it's not like, oh, maybe can we see it? It's going to happen, right? Especially because she has close ties to the US, right? Not only through like the sponsorship, the, you know, the rubber stamp from fucking Reagan for her dad to do what he did in the 80s. But if I'm not mistaken, like she's been married like 3 or 4 times, mostly to like U.S. like congressmen and shit. So she already has like her kids are American. Like I think she lives in the U.S. Like she already has these ties there, and there's going to be like rubber stamp. You know what I mean? Oh, you have communists there. You have these thugs there. Yeah, sure, do whatever the fuck you want. And especially having Bukele there, like next door, like it's over, man. And I think. And again, trying to get philosophical about it as well. Like this is why we need to be viewing everything. This is why our societies and like everything that we're seeing around us, our material realities, as the extension of systems in place. Because it's a very right-wing thing to look at crime, for example, and think all these individuals over here, this group of people, they're just criminals, man. As opposed to they've had their material conditions destroyed and motherfuckers got to eat. You know what I mean? Like, people got to eat. So they're going to do things to make sure they can keep the lights on. They can keep a roof over their moms, you know, in the mom's house. They can feed their kids, they can feed themselves, whatever. Like, they don't, there's nothing to combat that. And we see it all the time, like in the US, whatever. And it seems silly to have to point out, but this is the thing that people buy into. It's like, oh yeah, you know, the gang members, like, they're all going to jail, so, you know, crime's gonna go, you know, it's gonna go down now, where crime doesn't budge, you know what I mean? The people, the face of what you think crime is, they're being locked up and humiliated. And like, what do people think is going to happen when it all, because I reckon there's going to be blowback against Bukele. What do you think is going to happen when, like, all the gang members that are being humiliated in these mega prisons, once they, you know, get the word out to the homies on the outside, like, what do you think is going to fucking happen? It's going to be bad.
Yeah, no, shit's fucking crazy. Like, Guatemala gets me. Oh, man, they were going to win, dude. Fuck. Right? Like, Guatemala's, like I said, people got to be paying close attention to that situation. Because, like you're saying, like, Suri Rios even has, like, Bukele advisors as part of her campaign team. Like, this is really bad. Like, this is, But here's the thing, like I said, to sprinkle a little bit of optimism at the end, right? Like, I loved, and some people, like, love him or hate him, right? This guy's a controversial guy in El Salvador. I loved what FMLN Secretary General and former Vice President Oscar Ortiz said when Nueva Cideas first got their supermajority. He said something to the effect of,
oh, yeah,
hey, we went underground before. If we have to do it again, we'll do it again. Damn. Those are fucking fighting words. They haven't done it yet, right? Yeah. But that's honestly, hey. All I'm going to say is one simple sentence that may or may not be related to everything we said, which is Cuban Revolution keeps getting vindicated. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I've neither advocated nor denied or supported anything. Cuban Revolution keeps getting vindicated. That's my final line of the day.
Yeah, it's just like Jesse the Body Ventura said when he met Fidel Castro. Like, you did it. You did it, buddy. Like, you did it. Like, you're still here. They came after you and you're still here. This is Jesse the Body Ventura, who's ostensibly, well, like a libertarian kind of dude. And he went down there and he's like, bro, like, high five, you did it. So, yeah. And again, like, the Cuban Revolution, or at least how the revolution exists now, might not be our specific model here at Machete Mate, but you can't knock them, right? Because they did the thing how they, again, adapting to your local conditions. They adapted to the local conditions, and that's how their revolution has manifested, and they're still doing the thing, man. But anyway, we'll wrap it up there. Great little conversation here. Like I said, if you support what we do, head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/machetemate. You get access to our periodic, we haven't done it in a while, but like our After Dark episodes are sort of more a casual conversation of what the fuck's going on in our lives. You get access to the Discord community where we talk some bochinche about different things and current events and stuff like that. It's pretty, pretty, pretty dope. We talk about Canada because one of the homies is Canadian. It's always interesting learning about Canada. And definitely check out the conversation that we kept referencing with Julian Garrido. That was our last drop on the main feed. So check that out. Maybe check that out before you check this one out. So if you're hearing this, just stop, check that out, and then re-listen to this. But yeah, unless you have anything else to add, Austin, we'll wrap it up there. We'll just, you know, cut it. And peace and hasta la victoria.
Peace and love, everybody. Peace and love.
Mi gente, thank you for listening to this edition of Machete Mate. If you support what we do, consider showing your solidarity at patreon.com/machetemate. You'll be helping us out by allowing us to put out more and better content while also getting access to our Discord community, our more casual and personal After Dark episodes, and any other projects we might have down the road. If not, we still love you, so show us some love with a good rating and review on whatever platform you spend time with us. And as always, hasta la victoria.